Reality.
Check.
Podcast.
The storming of the Capitol building in Washington, D.C. on the 6th of January shocked the United States and the world. Senior political leaders called for President Donald Trump to be removed from office for inciting his supporters to violence. But some observers had seen it coming. One of them is investigative journalist Robert Evans, who has covered civil conflicts in places such as Ukraine, Iraq, and Syria. He's reported on far-right extremist groups in the United States and the use of the internet to communicate and organize. In his podcast, It Could Happen Here, Robert explores why and how a second civil war could be brewing in the United States.
Why did you think it was important to address those questions in the first place?
Because I traveled to a couple of different civil wars in Ukraine and Iraq and then later in Syria. And I talked to people who had lived through them. And the overwhelming thing that they all told me was it came out of nowhere. It feels like a bad dream. We never thought it could happen. And then one day it had consumed our lives. That was the first thing that made me realize the same kind of violence overtaking the United States wouldn't require some sort of massive sea change. It doesn't, nothing impossible needs to happen. It could happen tomorrow. And seeing it as a real possibility was the first step towards investigating how it would look and what would need to happen. And the more I investigated it, the more realistic a possibility it seemed. And some of that was talking to people like Daryl Johnson, who's a former Homeland Security analyst who started blowing the whistle on right-wing extremism in the United States from within the government. In 2009, he was predicting a lot of what happened yesterday, a decade ago. I also talked to David Kilcullen, who was a strategist with the State Department and was former Australian Special Forces, is an expert on counterinsurgency. And one of the most striking things to me was telling him, I'm worried about a civil war in the United States, and him saying, in essence, yeah, me too. And so it was that kind of process of realizing it was a real threat, realizing what it would look like, and feeling kind of a duty to warn people about it so that people could be prepared for what was coming.
So what happened on Wednesday night at the Capitol really just, to a certain extent, it would sound as if that confirms your suspicions or your worries.
My concerns have only been reinforced. I was not surprised by what happened yesterday. When you have a large segment of the population who believes the government is trying to exterminate them, which a lot of these people believe, that's the essence of the QAnon conspiracy theory, that this cabal of satanic pedophiles is attempting to wipe out large segments of the human race. That's really what a lot of the people who stormed the Capitol believed, and they believe Nancy Pelosi et al. Are a part of that. When you believe that, you're kind of a bad person if you don't try to storm the Capitol. If you think these people are trying to murder you and your children, if you don't go after them, then what do you, like, what are you, really? It was the only logical outcome of an incredibly virulent strain of cultic conspiratorial thinking that has devoured the American right. And with that kind of belief system so common in that chunk of our body politic, there was no way something like this wouldn't occur.
But some people might think that sounds like exaggeration. Yet in your podcast, you look at lots of different aspects step by step. So give us an idea of some of the depth with which you've looked into these issues.
Well, you know, one of the things that I've looked into is there have been sociological researchers in the United States for decades now who have done surveys of tens of thousands of Americans to determine over time how many Americans trust their fellow Americans, how many Americans see their political opponents as their enemies, like on a fundamental level, and how many Americans hate other Americans and fear other Americans that they disagree with. And the number of Americans who hate and fear their political opponents has risen dramatically. It has never been higher at any point in American history since the Civil War. And when you have that kind of internecine hatred that has been raising to a fever pitch continuously, it makes violence more likely. Now, another thing that convinced me that this was a problem, and something else that you can see documented, is the rising levels of political violence on the streets of the United States. It has become more and more common in this country for people with political differences to fight with weaponry in the streets of multiple American cities. It happened all last year. I was at a number of those fights. I had my hand broken in one of those fights from a right-wing demonstrator who saw me filming and hit me with a baton. That has become increasingly common. And, you know, what you saw yesterday was people storming the capital of this country. Some of them were carrying guns and zip ties to arrest elected leaders they disagreed with. They attacked press. They destroyed press equipment. They threatened the lives of not just elected leaders, but press and their political opponents. This has been growing and brewing, and the signs have all been there. They've been documented by researchers, you know, talking to people and seeing the changes in Americans' opinions of other Americans. And I guess no one should really be surprised that when year after year, more and more people say they hate their political opponents in this country, that they start doing violence to them. It's really, again, just not very surprising.
So here's a question. It's a pretty huge question. What does this mean for the Biden administration, assuming that the next couple of weeks go fairly smoothly and Joe Biden is inaugurated?
I don't think it's going to go smooth. It already hasn't gone smoothly, right? We had the Capitol taken over yesterday. So I think the idea that it will go smoothly is kind of already put out to pasture. There will be more protests on the 20th. I suspect the police will be more ready. I don't think they'll occupy the Capitol again immediately, but they will try again at some point. And they'll be more organized when they do. Because this worked once, they'll do it again. I think that we are going to see right-wing extremism and right-wing terrorist attacks continue to escalate in 2021. And they've been escalating for a while. You know, right-wing domestic terrorism is largely right-wing in the United States. That's the vast majority of it. And that trend will continue unabated, especially as, you know, once the coronavirus, you know, once the vaccine is out enough that the lockdown's in, you'll have more people in public places, which means more targets for mass shootings and for bombings. And I also expect more attacks on protests, on left-wing protests, to raise. The kind of nightmare scenario that we missed in 2020, thankfully, but we came close to it a few times, is where you have a group of left-wing demonstrators, many of whom are carrying guns because everybody has guns in America, and you have a group of right-wing demonstrators, many of whom have guns, and they show up to protest at the same location, and you have a mass exchange of gunfire between two politically opposed sides. We have had shootings between left and right wing protesters a number of times in 2020. Thankfully, none of those times were mass exchanges of gunfire. I am terrified that that is on the horizon. And when it happens, I think there's a good chance it could have a domino effect, because however many people die on both sides, that will inspire more protests and solidarity with the dead on both sides, which will inspire more counter protests, which will mean more opportunities for armed groups of people who are our political opponents to shoot at each other. And that's the sort of situation that could get out of control very, very quickly.
That sounds like a particularly bleak outlook. I mean, is there any sign of how to move forward to prevent this kind of scenario?
We have to get a handle on social media disinformation and on education in general. That's really the root of all of these problems. There is no common understanding or acceptance of basic reality in this country, right? You have a huge chunk of the country who believes the coronavirus is fake. You have a huge chunk of this country who refuses to wear masks because they believe that being asked to wear masks is a Chinese communist ploy. That is millions of Americans. Some of them are willing to fight and die over that. And it sounds silly and dumb, and it is dumb, but it the root of this problem is that, again, basic agreement upon the nature of reality has completely broken down in this country. And I don't know how you fix this. I don't know how you stop the cycle of acceleration without getting people on the same page about some basic elements of factual reality. If we can't do that, there's nowhere for this to go. There's no putting this back in the bag, because the people who believe that the Democratic Party is allied with Antifa to put in place a genocidal communist regime that wants to literally murder and rape their children, which again is millions of Americans at this point, people who truly believe that, if they continue to believe that, you can't stop them from wanting to defend themselves. That's their reality, and it's wrong, and it is unhinged and a-factual, but it is what they believe, and you have to fix that before you can stop this cycle. And no one knows how, but we know what's causing the problem, and it is social media. That is the root of a lot of this. Our brains were not designed for what Facebook and Twitter and YouTube have put in front of them, and all of these companies built algorithmic engines that primarily generate profit for them by creating or by putting content that makes people angry and afraid in front of their eyes and ears. That's where all of this was birthed from, right? It came from the internet, and it is now spread into the masses of our body politic. And what the actions that are being taken by social media companies right now to try to clamp down on things as a result of the actions that happened yesterday are too little and too late. You know, the damage is done. The alternate reality ecosystem is so well established and so resilient that anyone who tells you they know how to clamp down on it is lying to you.
We've heard a lot of criticism of big tech and the social media platforms and so on. That's nothing new. Your message seems to be taking the consequences of what's happening much further into the future with a dire warning. So to what extent is your message being taken note of?
You're the fourth interview I've done today. This happens every time there's some big right-wing attack, right? Because the last couple of years, every one of these has been preceded by me writing an article and saying, hey, this is going to happen, and then it happens. And people pay attention to for a while, but, you know, not enough, not everybody. There's already a bunch of rumors spreading in right-wing media. On Fox News, Lou Dobbs is retweeting a guy, Andy Ngo, who is a right-wing provocateur who's lying and blaming everything that happened yesterday on Antifa. So however many people pay attention to the truth, there's this massive system of disinformation merchants, many of whom are very well-paid members of the mainstream media, who make their money by pushing forward any view of what's happening that doesn't mesh with reality, because reality is going to be bad for their bottom line. Because the reality is that our society cannot continue in any sort of reasonably peaceful and united vein while they continue to have jobs, right? Like that's a big part of the problem. I've been blaming social media a lot because it accelerated all of this, but this started in the late 80s and early 1990s. You could even trace it back further to the John Birch Society, but the growth of the right-wing alternate media ecosystem, with Rush Limbaugh being a major accelerating factor and Fox News sort of coming in after that, is what sort of fertilized the ground that this all started to grow in. And as long as these people are able to lie about issues of life and death to tens of millions of Americans, these problems will persist. The violence will accelerate. You know, it's a big, 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 big problem. It's a very deeply rooted issue. And fixing that issue would mean cutting billions of dollars out of a specific chunk of the economy. And so there's a lot of people who will do anything possible to not let the truth be spread.
Can I go back to sort of like the immediate future and just ask, what are you going to be watching most closely in the hours and days ahead between now and the inauguration?
Yeah, the Donald.win and Parler are two major social media outlets where a lot of the people who attacked the Capitol yesterday gather. Telegram, there's a bunch of different Telegram channels, which is an encrypted social media app where Nazis, some of whom were at the event yesterday, talk. I'll be continuing to stalk Telegram. I will be watching a lot how the mainstream media picks this up, because I'm going to be very frustrated if I see people at CNN and MSNBC and the like continue to give credence to the "this is Antifa" rumors or the both sidesism, blaming the violent left on some of this. I'm going to be very frustrated if I see that. I suspect I will. I'm going to be paying attention to what actions are actually taken by social media companies. You know, I was glad to see that Facebook has at least finally suspended the president until the end of his term. They should have done it a lot earlier, but at least that's been done. And the reason they're doing this has nothing to do with any sort of social responsibility. It's because the people who run those companies also have to live in this country, and yesterday finally terrified them.
FM Fear. Reality check.